He's right there, as we said, perched at the intersection, TV, technology, the entertainment world, where these things are all coming together. That's where you find Simon Applebaum. He has, of course, the hit webcast and blog. Tomorrow will be televised. He's got some insight on what's going on here with the situation with Conan O'Brien. We've not had an opportunity to break that down to any degree on the show since that happened. He has some thoughts on the 3D coverage of the Masters. He was there to check that out as well. Simon is always the guy, you know, with his finger on the pulse. And fortunately, he's here with us tonight to talk about that. Simon, always a pleasure. How are you, my man? Simon?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, Simon. Okay, yeah. Couldn't hear you at first. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. We had a little rain the last hour or so here in New York, but it's cleared up, and we've had some wonderful times here in New York the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, well, let's start with, you know, the earth-shattering news here about Conan going to TBS. That kind of hit like an earthquake when it happened. I was very much taken aback, and we've talked about this on the show before. You and I have talked a lot about the late night situation, where it's going. You and I are always kind of talking about futuristic things when you're on the show here. So certainly, when you look at this, again, the platforms that Conan's going to be on, you know, with cable TV, with the various internet aspects that he's bringing to it, social networking, that's, of course, going to reach parity with the networks at a certain point in time. But I think the big question on everybody's mind for right now, you've got TBS, you've got basic cable. They are elevated by this by getting somebody the caliber of a Conan O'Brien. Conan, I think most would have to say, because the perception still is that network is king, Conan has to be diminished somewhat by taking this deal, even if in the long run it's going to play out okay. What do you think weighs more? Is TBS and basic cable raised higher than Conan is diminished by this?
It's already been raised higher in the couple of weeks that this announcement broke. Conan has been all over the TBS and TNT map. You're going to hear a lot about him on the NBA playoffs that have already started, on other sports coverage, and just all over the place. This is a big coup for cable. This is a big coup for TBS in particular. And you got to give credit to two things. One, Steve Coonan, the head of Turner Entertainment Networks, and Michael Wright, the head of programming at both TBS and TNT, they jumped on an opportunity when it looked like the Fox people were not going to get the job done. And the reason why they didn't get the job done is very simple. The Fox stations. They were not willing to buy into Conan O'Brien and give up the 11 to 12 o'clock midnight time period, which is very lucrative for them because that's when they run off-network reruns of The Office, Seinfeld, The Simpsons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They just would not part with that at a time when local TV stations are hurting for ad revenue. The last couple of years have been terrible. Recessions have hurt local stations left and right, particularly in the industries where they get most of their money, the auto field, or anything related to auto parts, auto dealers. For some stations, they get 40% of their ad revenue off the auto industry. When that fell through, went over the cliff, they've been in trouble ever since. And as bad as broadcast network ratings are getting, Rick, broadcast station ratings are worse. But the 11 o'clock to midnight time period is when they make a lot of money, and the Fox stations were not going to give that up.
What just really strikes me also is, in this fast-paced world, you know, where, and again, just the thought a year ago of Conan going to TBS, think about that. He hadn't even taken over the Tonight Show yet. The transition was still underway. But I go back to, I think it was January on this show, when Bill Carter from the New York Times was on with us, and he broached the possibility of a Fox-FX hybrid for Conan. And it was a deal where he would be on FX in the markets where they couldn't get the local clearance. And at the time, I was thinking, geez, Conan's going to be on cable in a number of major markets. How's that going to work out? I mean, this is a guy who has the network identity. I mean, and now he's having to settle for 100% cable. You know, and again, you know, in the long run, we're not saying that it's necessarily going to be to his detriment. Who knows what the landscape's going to be in 2015, 2016, and beyond. But in the near term, just the notion of him going to cable, just it still seems hard for me to wrap my mind around that they were able to make this thing happen.
Yeah, and the big thing, Rick, is the day that TBS announced this deal, Conan was going to have a meeting with Fox and with John Landgraf, the president of FX, and John was going to offer him the moon, the stars, and everything else. You know, your own 11 o'clock hour, Monday through Friday in FX. We'll give you primetime specials. We'll work with Fox to give you prime award show hosting duties, maybe other things, and TBS beam to the punch. But if that didn't happen, I think FX would have gotten a very good chance. Because once again, I don't think the Fox stations were going to jump in on this. They were very reticent about it. The best Fox could do is say to Conan, maybe at the start, if we do put you on this fall, you'll get maybe 50% clearance on our stations. And that just won't do. And TBS gives them 100% clearance. Plus, the more we're learning about this deal, the more we now know that Conan's production company, Kanako, is going to get a first look deal with TBS for whatever pilots they come up with. So they could give, maybe give TBS some hit original sitcom to the bargain.
That's kind of compelling to have it go with it. You know, you were talking about previously being able to kind of billboard him, obviously, during the NBA playoffs, and of course TNT's got that through the conference finals, as they customarily do, and they've got other events between now and then. One of the things that immediately popped into my mind when it became clear that he was going to be coming on after the MLB playoffs were done is, because if you think about it, I think Lopez started last year after the playoffs were done, especially in that first round when they've got the monopoly on the division series, and you got in some cases some triple headers. Those things are really, really kind of running late. You're going to have, I would think, necessarily some preemptions in there. Now you get into the second round where it's the league championship series, and they've only got the one game, so you can have that early enough. But do you think that's something where they're just going to bite the bullet and say, look, it's going to only affect us maybe 3, 4, 5 days at the most out of the calendar, and we'll just preempt our late night shows on these days?
Well, Conan is not going to start until November, the same time that Lopez tonight did.
But next year,
so they're going to get a great lead-in from the playoffs. TBS goes to the league championship series, and they will certainly promote that to the Hill. Plus,
yes.
Don't forget that the first week of Lopez tonight, or at least the first night, was simulcast by TNT and by True TV, and I think Conan's going to get the same buzz. I think they're going to do the same simulcast deal, at least for the first day, maybe the first week. So he's going to come in with tremendous force, all
okay.
guns blazing. And everybody's going to wonder, what kind of show is Conan doing? How will this be different from the NBC Tonight Show? Will Max Weinberg and the Max Weinberg band be back? What will be different? What will be the same? So he's going to come in on a tremendous white horse.
Well, in this fast-paced world, maybe it's hard to kind of get a read more than 18 months down the road. But I meant, actually, I should have clarified this. I meant actually like 2011 and the subsequent years. When Conan, after he's already been on for close to a year and everything, what do you think they do? Have there been any indications yet about what happens to the 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock shows the nights when they're loaded up with baseball in the first round?
They're not looking that far down the road, Rick. I think they want to get this thing going first. They want to see what kind of show Conan does. By the, obviously this kind of late night show like Lopez's program will get some tweaking as it goes on. But all signs look good. And as I said, also there's a possibility that maybe TBS could combine this late night show with a new sitcom or two from his production company.
Okay. All right. And so in terms of October 2011, I guess that's me kind of characteristically overanalyzing everything. But that's it's gonna be really interesting to see how this fits in. We've talked about this. And
Rick, one other thing before you go on.
Sure.
This was not the only big deal impacting broadcast television. Just a couple of days later, My Network TV announced that they're dropping Friday Night SmackDown, which is their big Friday night program. That is the one major show that draws ratings for that service. That's going to Sci-Fi on Friday nights. So 3 to 4 million households that would be watching My Network TV on a Friday night between 8 and 10 are now going to Sci-Fi. That's a big coup for Sci-Fi, another big coup for cable, and thanks to World Wrestling Entertainment's contract running out. And I got to think the My Network stations like Channel 9 here in New York are furious, because that's their one big show. Everything else with My Network TV is reruns, whether it's Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, to The Unit, to Law & Order Criminal Intent, and they're not very happy that their one big original made-for-that-channel property is going somewhere else.
The big show on that network, ironic, because it's, I think ever since the brand split, most people would say it's been a distant number two show as far as the company's priority, but I guess it was the big fish in the small pond on that network. The funny thing is, I wouldn't even, I was laughing about this past year when it became clear what was going to air all these other nights on My Network TV. I'm looking at it like, in Cleveland, where we're based out of here, Channel 43, when I was growing up, that was just an independent station. And I'm looking at it now, and I'm going, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, because you can call it a network, but that reeks of being an independent if you're running, all this kind of you know, reconstituted programming on these other nights. You know, I mean, SmackDown was one original thing that was in there, but they had a lot of filler in there as well.
Yeah. And I think that this may be the last year for my network because of SmackDown going to Sci-Fi. And yes, I know there'll be a lot of purists who say, you know, why the heck is Sci-Fi taking a wrestling show, which is not the first time they've done that. They did that with ECW and until now the NXT show on Tuesday nights. But the thing now is that Sci-Fi now gets 3 to 4 million households, and if they want to launch a new Sci-Fi drama at 10 o'clock on Friday nights, they will have a built-in audience. So it's a huge coup for them. Yes, it's not a match for what Sci-Fi is doing with their format, but they make up for it with a far bigger audience on Friday night than they've ever had when SmackDown comes their way.
Well, you know, that horse left the barn long ago. I mean, when ECW first debuted there in 06, they were making noises about trying to make it like a hybrid. They were maybe going to have they had a zombie character on the first show, and then they were like, screw this, we're just going to stick to what we do, and if it doesn't fit on the network, it doesn't fit. Having said that, one of the things that's been talked about the last couple of years is the fact that, again, it got shunted to Friday nights, I believe, back when they were, I think it was when they were on the WB or whatever they were on.
They were on UPN first, and then they were on the CW before it moved over to my network.
That's right. Because originally, the first couple of years, it was on Thursdays. Friday would not be the night of preference normally for the company, but it does look like they're sticking with Fridays once it moves to Sci-Fi.
Yes, it's going to stay Friday night, probably be 8 to 10. I think they're going to keep it 2 hour. They may go 3 hour. They certainly do have that flexibility. I'm not sure what the contract's going to say. But something else, Rick, why this is very important in the scheme of things is because, as Mark Berman of Media Week and other people have been noting, Friday night has become the new dead zone for broadcast network television. We already have Saturday night where cable dominates, and the three broadcast networks that are running at that time, ABC, CBS, NBC, get maybe a 15 share of audience right now. When you throw in Fox, maybe 20 plus. And it's starting to be that way on Friday nights now. So I think we're going to see more reruns on Friday nights, and the fact that SmackDown is now gone to cable is going to pull the overall share of audience on broadcast television on Friday nights down further. Friday nights is really becoming a dead night for broadcast and a big night for cable.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the trend just kind of accelerates with a move like this happening. As far as developments with TV with the year 2010, it's been the buzz for months now that this is going to be the year that 3D really starts to get a foothold in here. We've been hearing about, you know, the World Cup is going to be the first big event with that to happen, with ESPN launching their service here. You had an opportunity here during the Masters to be able to check out a little bit of, I don't know if you'd call it a pilot program or whatever the case may be. You were there in New York at a place watching it on there. Talk about the experience. Talk about, you know, because everybody's kind of wondering what this is going to be like to watch 3D on home TV. What were you picking up, and what was the buzz of the people you were talking to?
Well, I was over at Time Warner Center on Sunday afternoon when Phil Mickelson made those miraculous shots to win his third green jacket. Time Warner Center, Columbus Circle near Central Park, had a special screening of the Masters. It basically was CBS's pictures, but ESPN's Mike Tirico and Andy North did the play-by-play. And they were right outside Borders. They had hundreds of people coming in. Many stayed. People were going in and out. The place was packed. People were on sofas squishing to see this coverage. And I have to tell you, it was remarkable to watch it on 3D. You really saw the colors of Augusta National Golf Club just popped. The greens, you could see the undulations. You could see how the sand traps looked. You could see how the mounds were outside the greens, outside the fairways. It really put more spectacular punch into the Masters, and I think for people who are rooting for Mickelson or for Tiger Woods or whoever to win the tournament, I think it gave them more of a rooting interest. It certainly spiked their appeal, and for people I could talk to during the time I was there, they were very excited about it. They didn't have any concerns about the glasses or having like eye strain or whatever. They just loved the coverage. They were really, really surprised. And with that, something should be said about the Augusta National Golf Club. I am not a big fan of Billy Payne and the people who run the tournament. I love the tournament. I love the coverage. I think the Augusta National Golf Club, along with the International Olympic Committee, may be the most backward sports organization in the world. But you got to give them credit for all the faults that they have, for recognizing what 3D could be for them. And the fact that they were able to allow Comcast and Time Warner Cable and other cable operators around the country on very short notice to put this coverage together is something. And you also got to give credit to the cable operators and other people who were able to get this thing going with less than 3 weeks' notice. I mean, Time Warner Cable had flyers. I think they really took great pains to sort of say to the audience at where I was in New York, here's what 3D is all about, here's when it's going to come, don't get your hopes up too high, you know, watch the coverage for what it was.
You know, I was joking about this with a friend of mine who's a kind of a media observer himself about this whole thing that they place such tight restrictions on the hours that CBS can show the Masters on the weekends when ESPN was able to show the first two rounds, and yet they're allowing, I mean, and it's not wall-to-wall streaming, but they're allowing an awful lot of streaming online here. And I was just kind of joking about this with my friend. I think we were kind of like half serious. Maybe we're stereotyping those guys at Augusta National, but they're probably going,
I don't think you are, Rick. I have to tell you that this was a mountain or a glacier movement for these folks. I mean, these are the people who will not allow CBS, as you say, to run more than 2 or 3 hours of coverage on the weekends. These are the folks that blackballed Gary McCord years ago for the bikini wax comment. And it's amazing to me that CBS has still not put its foot down and say to the Masters, look, we pick the announcers, you don't. It's about time you forgive Gary McCord. It wasn't that great a comment. It wasn't that big a deal. You should be in a forgiving mood, and so on and so forth. And the Masters seems to have its way no matter what, even the most innocuous of things. So what they did to allow 3D to happen, when we don't know whether, in fact, this is going to be a major thing in television, the same way that high definition has become, is really a mountain mover. And I get, and for all the faults I talk about with the Masters, I got to give Billy Pray and his people a lot of credit for this. This was a big, big mountain mover for them.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's a thing where obviously I think they have CBS by the short hairs because it's a year-to-year deal. And that's you know, there's always the threat to take it elsewhere if CBS doesn't like their terms. So you think the notion in terms of the amount of streaming that they've allowed, in terms of these old white guys sitting around saying, let them stream it. Who watches stuff on the Internet anyways? So you think that that's not what's happened as far as them allowing streaming but not much TV coverage?
No, I think that they just saw this possibly with 3D. I mean, I would love to see this lead to a lot more stuff. I mean, I think there should be full 18-hole coverage of the Masters. I think CBS should be allowed to put on the announcers that they want. They should be allowed to dictate to say what the prize money is and all that sort of stuff. I mean, and there are things I do like about the Masters. I like the fact that the commercial coverage is limited, that they do, although I'm sure there are a lot of sponsors who would like to be on that coverage and can't because you only have 3 or 4, like IBM and ExxonMobil and so forth, that get the shot for however they get it. But yeah, I would love to see the Masters be like every other sports event where you get as much coverage as you like, where Internet streaming is not limited to certain things, and certainly when CBS can put the announcers that they want. You know, Gary McCord should be on that 16th hole. I'm sorry. Time for the Masters to grow up. And also, I think they owe a long overdue apology to Jack Whitaker. Back in 1966, Jack was booted off CBS's coverage. He was the anchor at the time, one of the best play-by-play commentator people around, because around the 16th, 17th hole one year, there was a very angry scene on one of the holes where it looked like the golfers were having a problem getting through the crowds, and he called the crowd at the time a mob. I saw that coverage. He was exactly right, and CBS would not defend him, and the year after, he was taken off the coverage for good. And I think the Masters people owe Jack Whitaker a huge apology.
Yeah.
It's time for them to own up and grow up and do that. I'd like to see that happen before he passes on.
Yeah, that's pretty weak the way that they handled that, no doubt about it. As far as the 3D thing here, let's bring this back to that to bring it full circle here tonight, Simon, because we're always talking about futuristic and technology things with you when you're on the show. I've been hearing some notes that the way that 3D might work on TV is a little bit different than how we conventionally kind of think of things. I go back, the last thing I saw last year was last year, My Bloody Valentine 3D. I thought that was absolutely spectacular. But that's the way we think of things. They're whizzing in front of your eyes, whatever. From what I've been hearing about the 3D TV, it may be more of a thing of being like sucked into the TV, like you're seeing dimensions inside of the TV. Is it a little bit of that and a little bit of the conventional, or how would you kind of describe it?
I would describe it as giving any type of programming some sort of depth you don't get before, even with high definition. I mean, high definition has been a game changer, a universe changer for television, and 3D is hopefully going to be in that ballpark where you get more of the depth, more of the this is right in your face kind of television. I think the challenge for everybody is to connect that to the public. High definition certainly has, but what I think 3D's challenge is going to be is to wean the public from thinking, oh, this is something I may see once in a blue moon, like every 6 months, Avatar one time, and maybe How to Train Your Dragon on television 5 months later, to showcase this as a way that any genre of programming, documentary, sports, news, game show, drama, can work. We know that every TV set maker is going to offer a 3D set by the end of the year, but the big challenge is going to be to get the public to see that this is not just a one-shot novelty medium. This is a medium that works with a lot of programming. And the two questions along with that is, can the TV set makers make that case? And two, can the programming bounce up? Can the variety and the quality of programming work in 3D? We're going to certainly get a shot at that. DirecTV in June is going to offer three channels. ESPN, as you mentioned before, is going to launch its 3D service with the World Cup in July in South Africa. And then this fall, we're going to have the Discovery Channel with Sony and IMAX. That will be a 3D show. They're going to launch it next summer, but a few weeks ago when Discovery had their fall season preview, they made it very clear they're not waiting for next summer. They're going to do it this fall. So they seem to think that the number of sets in the market is going to go up. The pricing of the sets is coming down pretty fast compared to what HD did in the early days. And they think the public is going to get the message that this is a wide-ranging medium. I'm not sure yet, but I must say, coming off the Masters, I can tell you that there were a lot more people interested in 3D that I met there than I have met before.
Well, the trajectory of this thing as it continues to develop and take hold with the public ultimately is going to be fascinating to track, most definitely. Simon, as we always do here with you, let's take an opportunity to plug away. Of course, people can follow you on a weekly basis. Your column that's at MediaBizBloggers.com. It's also got a link to your weekly podcast there. Tomorrow will be televised. It's easy for me and for everybody at FDH, all of our readers, to find your stuff because you're right there permanently on our Ultimate Links page. You can just click on that and go to that page. But when people get there, talk about what they're going to find, what you got going on. You've always got a tremendous amount going on, both with the column and with the show.
Well, we're now on Mondays and Fridays. We're on at 3 o'clock on the East Coast and noon on the West on Blog Talk Radio. And coming up on Friday, we've got Amy Intercaso-Davis. She's the head of Original Plumbing at Oxygen. So we'll be talking about the shows that have become hits on that channel, like The Bad Girls Club and Dance Your You-Know-What-Off, and some new shows like Jersey Couture, which is premiering in June. So she'll be on Friday. And then on Monday, we have the executive producer of ABC's new drama, Happy Town, think Twin Peaks. His name is Josh Applebaum. I don't think he's related to me. I could be in for a surprise next Monday, but we'll be talking to him about that show, which premieres a week from tonight, 10 o'clock on ABC. And also on Monday, we will have the second of a two-part segment we call Women for Women, which is about women who lead organizations that are trying to advance the role women have in television, both in front of and behind the camera. We're going to have Maria Brennan, who is the new executive president of Women in Cable and Telecommunications. And then a week from Friday, we're going to have David McKillop, who's the head programmer at History. We'll talk about a new project called America, the Story of Us, which will premiere, I believe, Sunday night on History. And Barack Obama, President Obama, is going to introduce that program. But we'll also talk to him about one of the more interesting controversies in television these days, which is shows like Porn Stars and American Pickers that are hits. They're getting 4 to 5 million viewers a pop. But do they belong on that channel? What makes them history? And what does he say to people who think, no, they don't belong on your network, they belong on TLC or someplace else? That's going to be a fascinating conversation with David, and that will be on a week from Friday. So again, we're on Mondays and Fridays at 3 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio, and if you want to catch up on episodes you missed, you go to a homepage, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04, and there you can catch some of our more recent interviews with people like Eric Overmeyer, the co-executive producer of Treme, the new HBO hit series, and The People Behind the Wire, Graham Yost from Justified and The Pacific on HBO, and Justified on FX, which is probably one of the new top 10 new shows of the year, and Shelley Lewis, the executive producer of PBS's new news magazine, Need to Know, which will be debuting from the new studios at Channel 13 at Lincoln Center. So a lot of fun people to hear, and as you mentioned, we're also on podcasts as well. And by the way, it looks like by the end of this week, we will hit 50,000 downloads for the year.
Awesome.
Which, compared to, and that's really something, because we're getting that in less than 4 months, and for all of last year, the first year we did podcasting, we started in mid to late May, we had over 49,000. So to get nearly 100,000 downloads in less than a year is really something spectacular, particularly when a lot of people around the country don't know about the show, there's not a lot of marketing promotion. To get that kind of podcast. podcast acceptance is really special.
That is amazing, Simon. And yeah, you just perfectly illustrated what I'm talking about how your projects, you know, you're always on the cutting edge with the people you're talking to. And, you know, this Josh Applebaum, when it's on there, you know, you said you don't know if he's related. It'll be a memorable broadcast moment if he comes in and says, "Hi, Dad."
So. That will be very, not my dad, but it will be very, very interesting to see what happens. Incidentally, we had one of his colleagues on our show 2 years ago, Andre Nemec. He and Josh and Scott Rosenberg have done a number of dramas for ABC. Life on Mars, about a season or two ago, Samurai Girl for ABC Family, October Row, which ran a year and a half on ABC, and this is their latest, and a lot of people think this may be the next Twin Peaks. It's about a town that is occupied by some very strange people, and we'll see. I'm curious what David Lynch is going to have to say about this when this show premieres on Wednesday. And we have some other wonderful folks coming up in May. We'll be celebrating our first anniversary on Blog Talk. And we also hope to be doing some shows from Internet Week, which is happening in June. So a lot of stuff is happening, and we're getting ready also for the big news of what's going to be coming up this fall on all the broadcast networks, the Spanish language services, TBS and TNT. And by the way, there is talk that Conan will be at the TBS-TNT Join Up Front, which will be the week of May 17th here in New York.
Awesome. We'll be reading all about that on your column as it appears here and listening to the shows. Great stuff as always, Simon. You are one of our favorites. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure, Rick. Take care. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too, Simon. Simon Applebaum, everybody, from Tomorrow Will Be Televised.